Have you ever stared at a brand new project, or maybe just a really complex problem, and felt that urge for a clear roadmap? You know, not just a vague idea, but a really precise blueprint, something that tells you exactly what needs to happen.
Absolutely. That feeling of needing clarity before you dive in.
Yeah, because let's face it, so many great ideas stumble.
Right.
Right. Not because the execution was flawed, but because maybe nobody truly understood what they were trying to build in the first place.
That initial definition is so critical.
Well, today we're doing a deep dive into exactly that blueprint, specifically for software development. Functional requirements.
Yeah.
We're going to unpack this core trio, inputs, processes, and outputs, that really forms the bedrock of any successful software solution.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like the system's DNA.
It really is. And our mission today, it's more than just defining terms, isn't it? We want to show you how rigorously identifying these three elements is, well, it's the secret sauce, really. It transforms a broad concept into something crystal clear, something actionable. So by the end of this, you won't just know what functional requirements are. You'll get why they're absolutely critical, and maybe how this kind of structured thinking helps cut through complexity anywhere.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Before a single line of code gets typed, there's this crucial phase called analysis.
Wow.
What exactly happens here? Why is getting this stage right so incredibly vital?
Yeah, the analysis stage, you could almost think of it as the brain of the whole operation.
Okay.
It's where you take that initial, often kind of high-level problem description, and you put it under the microscope. You refine it meticulously into a precise description of exactly what the software needs to do.
So defining the boundaries.
Exactly. It's not just understanding the problem. It's defining the precise scope and capabilities of the software solution itself. And this whole process, it culminates in something called the software specification.
Right.
Which is so important, it often forms the basis of a legal contract between, say, a client and the software company.
A legal contract. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. And what's fascinating here, and sometimes a bit confusing for people, is that this specification focuses entirely on what the software will do.
Okay.
Not how it will do it, the how. Well, that comes much later in design and implementation.
Got it.
And just to underline how crucial this is, the cost of fixing an error you find during this early analysis stage, it can be anywhere from 50 to 200 times less expensive.
Wow.
Than finding that same error late in development, or even worse, after the software's out there.
That's like finding a flaw in the building's foundation versus trying to fix it when the skyscraper's already built.
Precisely. The ripple effect is enormous.
Okay, 200 times more expensive. That really puts a spotlight on getting that upfront clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So within this critical analysis phase, we zero in on functional requirements. Mm-hmm. We hear that term a lot. What precisely are they, and why are they so central to defining the problem and, well, avoiding those huge costs?
Functional requirements are, simply put, the specific features and functions the system absolutely must deliver.
The must-haves.
Exactly. Think of them as the detailed answers to the question, what does this product actually need to do? They're clear, unambiguous statements spelling out every single input, every process, every output.
Okay.
If the overall software spec is like, say, the outline map of a country,
right.
Functional requirements are where you fill in every river, every mountain, every city. It's where the abstract idea becomes a concrete, verifiable list of behaviors.
And these requirements, they're famously broken down into those three key bits, inputs, processes, and outputs. I find people sometimes oversimplify these, but getting them right seems deep. Can you give us a really clear, actionable way to think about each one?
Absolutely. Let's break them down. First up, inputs. Okay. These are basically any piece of information or data that gets sent into the program for it to work with.
The raw materials?
Precisely. When you're identifying inputs, you're asking, what does this system need to actually start its task? It could be a user typing their name, maybe data pulled from a file, a signal from a sensor.
Like temperature or something.
Yeah, or even just clicking a button, it's the starting point, the fuel.
Got it, fuel. Okay, what's next?
Then we move to processes. These are the steps, the actions, the transformations that the program performs on those inputs.
Right.
To generate the outputs you want. This is where the magic happens, but it's also where precision is absolutely key.
So the calculations, the logic.
Exactly, calculations, logical decisions, data validations, like making sure a number is within a certain range.
Ah, validation.
Or maybe reorganizing information. When you define a process, you're answering, how does the system manipulate these inputs to get to the result? Even something seemingly small, like validate user credentials, that's a critical process.
It's the engine room, then.
That's a great way to put it. Turning raw data into something meaningful.
Okay, so inputs are the fuel, processes are the engine.
Mm.
What about outputs?
And finally, yes, outputs. These are the results. The information, the data that the program sends back to the user or maybe to another system.
In product.
Exactly. When defining outputs, you ask, what is the ultimate purpose here? What does this thing produce? It could be text on a screen, a printed report, maybe sound through speakers.
Or an email.
Or an email notification, or even a control signal to another device. It's the tangible outcome that shows the system did its job.
That's a fantastic breakdown. Inputs, processes, outputs, fuel, engine, result. I like that. And asking what it needs, how it transforms it, and what it produces.
Okay,
let's make this real. We need a concrete example. Let's take that raw music agency scenario from the materials. They need a program for a band promotion, right?
Yeah.
How would we define its functional requirements using IPO?
Great example. Okay, for the raw music agency promotion program, the overall purpose is pretty specific. It needs to take the names of three fans.
Okay, three fans.
And the number of concert tickets each bought. And specifically, that number has to be between 3 and 6 tickets.
Oh, the range again.
Exactly. From that info, the program decides and then displays which fan gets the special prize meeting the band.
Cool. Okay, so inputs?
For the inputs, we'd need, first, the fan's name.
Right.
Second, the number of tickets they bought. And crucially, we specify that ticket number must be an integer between 3 and 6.
Not just any number.
No, it's a hard requirement. The system has to validate that input. That's part of the input definition, really.
Okay, makes sense. Now the processes, the engine part.
Right. The processes for this program involve a few logical steps. First, validate ticket count.
Checking that 3 to 6 range.
Exactly. The system has to confirm the number entered is actually valid. If it's, say, 2 or 7, that input's no good.
What happens then? Does it ask again or just stop?
That would actually be another functional requirement to define. How does it handle errors? But let's assume for now it needs a valid number.
Okay.
Second process, select random winner. Once the inputs are good, the program needs to generate a random number. Since there are 3 fans, it'd be a random number between 1 and 3.
Fair enough.
Third process, identify fan. Based on that random number, 1, 2, or 3, the program links it back to one of the fan names that were put in.
So it maps the random number to a specific fan.
Precisely. And, you know, as a best practice, each of these steps, validation, random selection, identification, would likely be built as separate little chunks of code, like procedures or functions. Makes it easier to manage.
Okay, modular. And the output, what's the final result?
The output for this one is pretty straightforward. It just needs to display the name of the lucky winner.
That's a really clear walkthrough. And it really highlights that validate ticket count process. It's not just taking the input, it's checking it first.
Mm-hmm.
If you just assume the input's always right, you're asking for trouble, aren't you? Is that a common mistake, just assuming inputs are clean?
Oh, absolutely. It's a classic pitfall. Teams can rush past input validation, maybe thinking the data will be fine, or it's just a minor detail.
Like.
But skipping that step or not defining precisely what makes an input valid and how to handle bad inputs, that can lead to corrupted data, crashes, totally wrong results.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's one of those seemingly small requirements that, if you miss it, causes huge headaches later. That's why that 50x to 200x cost factor really hits home here.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, let's try another one, maybe with a bit more calculation involved.
Yeah.
How about the Scandinavian Diving Championship example?
Ah, yes. Good one. That definitely brings in more processing complexity.
Okay.
So the purpose of the Scandinavian Diving Championship program is to record a diver's name, then take 5 scores from judges. Each score is a decimal between 0.0 and 10.0.
Okay, decimal scores, tight range.
Yep. Then the program has to process those scores. It needs to drop the highest one and the lowest one.
Right, like in real diving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then calculate the average of the 3 scores left, multiply that by a difficulty factor for the specific dive, and finally, display the diver's total score.
Okay, quite a few steps there. So inputs.
For the inputs, first, naturally the diver's name.
Okay.
Then those 5 individual judge scores. And again, the critical part. Each score must be validated as a decimal number between 0.0 and 10.0.
Precision is key.
Absolutely, because if a judge accidentally types 11 or maybe Munich 2.
Yeah, throws everything off.
Instantly invalidates the result. And we also need the difficulty factor as an input. That would also be numerical, probably a positive decimal, needing its own validation.
So even more focus here on validating those numerical inputs, making sure they fit the exact format and range.
Precisely. The validation is arguably even more critical here because of the subsequent calculations.
Okay, so what are the processes then?
The processes for the diving program are where the real algorithmic heavy lifting happens.
Okay.
We'd have one, validate judge scores, making sure each of the five is a decimal between 0.0 and 10 10 10 boro. That's paramount.
Right.
Two, identify highest and lowest scores. Need some logic to sift through the five valid scores and find the max and min values.
Okay.
Three, remove extremes. A step to actually exclude those top and bottom scores from the calculation set.
Got it.
Four, calculate average. Sum up the remaining three scores and divide by three.
Standard average.
Yep. And five, apply difficulty factor. Multiply that average by the dive's specific difficulty rating.
And each of these is a separate step.
Ideally, yes.
Yeah.
Separate testable procedures or functions. It keeps the logic clear and manageable.
Okay. And the output. What does the user see?
For the outputs, it's pretty clear what's needed. You need to display the diver's name alongside their final calculated total score.
So they can see the result immediately.
Exactly. Allows for immediate comparison, ranking, the whole point of the scoring.
What strikes me here is how the accuracy of the processes directly determines if the output is trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
If any of those steps, dropping scores, averaging, multiplying is even slightly off, the whole competition's integrity is shot.
Absolutely right.
It really drives home that functional requirements aren't just a checklist. They're about building trust and accuracy into the system itself.
It's completely true. And that really brings us to the bigger picture, doesn't it? Why is documenting all this detail so vital so early on? It's not just about, you know, getting the code technically right.
Mm.
It's fundamentally about clear communication. It's about managing expectations. It's about efficiency.
Avoiding that, but that's not what I asked for.
Moment.
Exactly. You avoid that disaster scenario with the client or user, and you give the developers a clear, unambiguous roadmap to follow.
So bringing this back to you, our listener, whether you're prepping for a big meeting, maybe learning about a new field, or you're just curious about how complex things work.
Yeah.
Why should you care about inputs, processes, and outputs, especially if you're not a software developer?
That's a great question, because understanding inputs, processes, and outputs, it isn't just for software engineers at all. It's actually a universally powerful framework.
Oh, how so?
It's a way to dissect any problem, any project, even just a task you're trying to learn. When you can systematically identify what information goes in, how is it transformed or acted upon, and what's the clear, desired outcome, you gain this incredible clarity. It cuts right through information overload.
Like a mental filter. Precisely. This framework helps you approach new knowledge or challenges much more strategically. Instead of feeling overwhelmed, you can pause and ask yourself those questions. Okay, what are the key pieces of information I need here? The inputs.
Right.
What steps do I need to take to really process or analyze or apply this stuff, the processes?
Mm-hmm.
And what clear result or insight am I actually aiming for? The output.
Ah, applying it to learning itself.
Exactly. This kind of structured thinking. It isn't just a shortcut. It's a foundational skill. It helps you be truly well-informed because you can break down immense complexity into manageable, understandable chunks.
And that just about wraps up our deep dive into functional requirements, focusing on that critical trio, inputs, processes, and outputs. Hopefully you feel like you've got a clearer blueprint now for understanding how software and really lots of other systems are designed to work.
Yeah, we've seen that really nailing down these definitions early isn't just some technical detail. It's a foundational step. It saves huge amounts of time, prevents those costly mistakes we talked about, and ensures resources go where they're needed. It's all about precision, clarity, and setting a project up for success from day one.
So as you go about your own learning, your own problem solving, here's a thought to chew on. How might clearly defining the inputs, processes, and outputs of a challenge in your own life, maybe planning a trip, learning a skill, even just cooking dinner, lead you to a more effective and maybe less overwhelming solution? Where could you apply this structured clarity?